Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the 9 or 9 podcast. This week's is a bit of a special follow-up to last week's. As you know, if you listened, I was at the first gig back in the Ivy Gardens where James Vincent McMorrow and Sorka Richardson played. It was the first major event to happen in Ireland, major live music event to happen in over 15 months. There has been some small social distant gigs here and there. But we got an opportunity to talk to James this week about how it came about, what he felt about it. And James was the one who got in touch about this because he wanted to have a chat, and he didn't, like he says, he didn't just want to do the show and feck off. So we talked to him earlier this week about the show and about the return of live music. Myself and Andrea talked to him. There's a lot in this as well. I think there's a lot of interesting discussion, a lot of talk about, you know, what could have been done, maybe the ambition that it started with, also what needs to be happened next and how cautious the Irish government and the departments are in terms of getting live events back. And James feels quite strongly about the return of live music and what we need to do to get there. So before I pass you over to him, I just want to say you can listen to our chat about it last week on the previous episode. And as ever, patreon.com/909. If you appreciate what we do, there's a great community over there with a Discord and playlists and stuff like that as well. So you can come and join us there. And in the meantime, let's pass over to James Vince McMorrow speaking to myself and Andrea Cleary. So last week you played one of the first events back, the trial event, pilot event in Ivy Gardens. Do you want to start with your own personal experience of all of that and how it felt and how it felt to bring your band back together and do a show?
Yeah, I mean, the reason I wanted to talk about it in the post part of it was because I think there was this sort of like, it felt like there was a lovely feeling, but there was also this sort of like self-congratulatory kind of air to it all. And the last thing I wanted was to do it and then just like ride off into the sunset and then just think that everything is solved. Because it was this kind of conversation where it was like, we're back. And you're like, yeah, but I'm not sure what that means. But for me, what we got, like having seen some of these people at their lowest moments in the last 2 years, people that like, because this is the reality, the things that don't get talked about, the nuance of it all, like there was no subsidy that I could apply for to subsidize the lost revenue of the 16 people that worked for me last year. You know what I mean? Like, they're all independent contractors. They all had to do their own thing. I couldn't go to the government and say, like, we had 10 festivals planned that would have generated X amount of money. So everyone was on their own. So to see them coming back and seeing that sort of like the feeling again, and it just in rehearsals and like, I know it's cliche to be like, oh, we'd never take it for granted again. I'm sure at some point we'll all take it for granted again. But I think last week, especially the 3 days leading up to it, just, I don't know, like it just, it felt like, it felt genuinely magical to me. Like it really did. And I said that on stage. And I think when you're looking at 500 people and people are watching the staticness of it all, I think you're like, how could this be magical to you? But like I hated that I couldn't take care of my crew last year. I hated it. It gave me sleepless nights for months. And I did crazy things to try, and we did 2 weeks of rehearsals last year where I paid everybody full wages for no reason, just because I wanted to give them something to do. So it was heartbreaking. So like genuinely on a most basic level, to just see 20 people back to work plus the other 30 people on top of that was like, it's where they're supposed to be, you know?
Can you tell us a bit about the finding out that, yes, it's going ahead, getting to ring around all those people and say, we've got work, we've got it now. How did it all come about for you? Was it a lot of conversations, or how did all that part of it work out?
Not many conversations for me, like hundreds of conversations for the people that work for me, for sure. It was getting to call everybody and say it and sending texts was like the greatest feeling. Like it felt like you're a provider, like you're providing something, not just like monetarily, but like just like emotionally, getting to like send everybody a text for the first time in a year and a half and go, you've got a fucking show, you've got a gig. Like that's something again that you took for granted, but it was just like such a beautiful thing to be able to do. And everybody was so excited. I mean, up until the show got confirmed, I honestly didn't think it was going to happen. I just thought that they would pull the rug out from under us, because I mean, we can get to this, but like at certain junctures the show looked like it was going to be a lot more ambitious than it was, and then it got pulled back and pared back, and things just constantly kept getting changed up until 2 hours before it got announced on the news. So I mean, yeah, it was a bit of a mad situation.
And were you comfortable with the level that it was rolled out at? Did 500 people feel right to you?
No, I think it should have been more, if I'm being perfectly honest. I don't think that, like, anyone that was watching that situation unfold, people are so well-mannered and so excited for this. And I think I understand on a very like clinical level, I understand that I'm ambition is not necessarily where they wanted to be. Caution was the word of the day. So on that level, I completely get it. But at the same time, I think you have to use your eyes and ears, and you have to look at the comps in terms of other industries and what they are and aren't allowed to do. And you have to look at it and go, like 500 people in a field that can hold 3,500, 4,000 people with 2 meters between them all is excessive, you know?
Definitely. By other industries, do you mean the way that they intend to be rolling out sporting events, for example, which is very different to, I think there's going to be a lot more leeway to allow more people to watch a sporting event, for example, than to watch a music event.
I think that in terms of like the way you corral people and stuff like that, I think that there's definitely going to be more leeway. And from the basic optics of the thing, again, looking at sporting events and how what they're saying up to 1,000, up to 5,000. I think there was a Shamrock Rovers match. There's different, they're having higher levels and they're saying we're in a stadium, we can see people. But again, it's the inconsistency of it all, I think, that doesn't get talked about.
I was just
my overriding instinct was to just do this. I just wanted it to happen. I want the conversation to happen. The reason I'm speaking to you now is because I know that the conversation might dip off and I want to keep it going a bit longer.
I totally understand that impetus and that feeling you have that you wanted to do this and you want to be involved. And, you know, from a personal and professional basis. Can I ask if, like, what was communicated in advance in terms of, because we talked about this last week because I was there and I had a lovely time and I felt a lot of feelings and I felt a lot of, I got to be social with people in my industry.
You were all
a
flutter, Niall, when
time.
You were telling me about it. You really
I
were.
Was, yeah, were. Yeah, yeah. And I was. And I was like, it was genuinely heartening.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, yeah, there's parts of it there that was like, this is a great window, a starting point back to where we want to go. But obviously, what was communicated in advance to you in terms of what it was trialing or piloting? because I think that's what at the moment what people are kind of going, what was it for?
Yeah, I completely get that. I think that in the beginning there was a lot more ambition. I think that you have to acknowledge that there's nuance and context to all these things, and I think the big context was that Delta variant situation like happening, where like I think that people like there's this sort of like very binary conversation that happens in these things. It's people that are on board are like, this is amazing. Like people that aren't on board are like, this is terrible, regardless of what you do or how it unfolds. They're going to be like this. And the reality is in that gray area in the middle. I think when they rolled out the pilot events in the UK, like my agent is the agent for Blossoms, and he did that show. And that was at that point where like the sky was blue and everything was opening up. And they were like, we're going to do this and we're going to like gather data and we're going to look at the reality of it. I think had they been doing that now, it would have been a very different situation, because I think that they would have gone into it a lot more cautiously, because obviously there's these situations now that throw the variables off and the caution level goes up. So that was the one thing. I know that when we had the first conversation, that the way we were talking about it and the way that like my management were talking about it was a lot more ambitious. And then as the conversation went on and those different variants started to show up in the country, it became a lot more cautious. It went from, you know, like 1500 people to 1000 to 500 to wherever it ended up, 600 including guests. And there was a lot of different things that happened. I think that it probably was always going to be cautious. And I think if you looked at it as like a pilot scheme to gather information, then that's not what happened. The way I was looking at it, and my sincere hope for it, is that what they were trying to set out was a template that could be rolled out across the country. That's what I want. The reason I'm talking to you is because that's the only, my only interest here is to make sure that people go, that they don't get to ride off into the sunset like they did one little thing and then they just do nothing for this industry. That has to be a template that they roll out, because it was a viable template. It was static and strange in a lot of ways, but we had the fucking time of our lives because we're getting to play music again. And as you said, Niall, like you got to be social in your industry. You got to take in this thing that's been lost to you for a year and a half. So once you move past the weird staticness of it, it's a viable premise, but it has to be rolled out as an actual thing. It can't just be this like weird test subject that you gather no information from or do nothing or act upon.
There's an argument there that, you know, that the testing and the data collection side of things, it feels like it should not at all be in the hands of promoters and bookers and the music industry, because they've enough to be doing with organizing these things. It seems to me that the government have the onus is on the government there to make sure that these things are rolled out responsibly. And by responsibly, I mean actually taking data and actually seeing what this thing can do. Because at the moment, this went off so well, there was no issues. So where is the incentive to push it, I suppose? Where is the incentive to go to 1,000 people, to go to 1,500 people? There isn't, because all we can see is this binary. Oh, we tried this and it worked. So let's just keep doing it like this until the pandemic's over. I'd be worried about that as well.
Yeah, there are a few things about that in terms of like the caution aspect of it. You know, I mean, you talk about the Delta variant stuff, but like at the same time, whether you agree with it or not, the UK is going ahead with a download festival this Friday with 10,000 people on a camping bus. So that's happening in the UK, regardless of the Delta variant. Also, you know, I mean, I guess the main thing is that people will look at and there was quite a lot of negativity afterwards in terms of what does this achieve? And I understand where that's coming from. And I guess the question is, why are we so cautious, do you think, in terms of why we're doing this? In terms of, because it's not really realistic to have socially distant gigs. We can't, promoters can't make money, artists can't make money.
No.
It's not the same experience. You know, obviously we all look at the Liverpool events that happened and Blossoms and the DJs thing where there was no social distancing. For me, I'm still waiting for, okay, this is lovely. But for me personally, I'm like, okay, when do we get to the point where we talk about no social distancing happening? And what do we need to get that done? Because that's the only way that we're going to get past back to normal, essentially.
Yeah, I think that like, obviously the conversation, like on a wider level needs to move past like coronavirus or COVID-19 more specifically being like this, in like sort of year and a half anomaly and being a part of our lifetime. You know what I mean? Like it's probably going to be with us, like as in terms of like a flu, like for the rest of our lifetimes. And the conversation does need to progress to something that normalizes the situation. You know, you can, it's impossible to, I guess, you know, the instinct is to compare and contrast countries because, you know, you're looking at other countries. I'm looking at America and I'm thinking I could just go to America and play a full tour, like 3,000 people a night in July. No problem at all. But obviously, America has the biggest, richest healthcare system on the planet. They have enough vaccine to cover every single person on the planet twice over. Like it's not the same thing. And you want it to, you want that. You want it to get back to normal. Ireland has proven itself to be unbelievably cautious and very like not ambitious at any juncture through this whole process. So for them to suddenly throw caution to the wind for the music industry at this point, I think would be incredibly out of step with how they have been this whole time. I can't say I'm surprised that they ended up in such a cautious place with the show. I was there to do the most ambitious thing that was possible to me. And we, from a musical perspective, that's all I could know to do. And I took a role within it to be positive during the run-up to it rather than throwing bombs because I felt like I'm not sure what to be gained at that point. And not that now I'm going to be throwing bombs, but I'm certainly like, I wasn't just like some passive, willing participant in it. I think that there was a much more ambitious route through it. And I think that had they taken, what bummed me out was had they taken the more ambitious route, we'd be talking here now about how, what a success 1,000 people was and how that was so much closer to a viable rollout. Because you're absolutely right. Now, there's no money to be made in this. Like 500 tickets, like at that price point with that type of like bureaucracy and logistics around it is like, it's a non-starter. They have to normalize the process. And that's why I want to progress the conversation because they have to roll back some of the red tape. They have to make it more viable. They have to make it, if you can go to IKEA and buy a bedside table and they're not like outside IKEA with the clicker going, okay, we've had 500 people through the shop today, we're shutting it down. Then you can't tell me that having 1,000 people in a giant field that are all incredibly mindful, incredibly watchful of each other and are there for the right time isn't a viable thing. They just have to, they have to move it to a point where it becomes viable. I am unwilling to accept that we did this thing and caution, and that's the base point. I think it has to, it can get more and more ambitious and it has to, because we can't go to the UK's point. Like we're not where they are. We're not where other countries are, but also other countries are below us as well. You have to accept that as well, that this is where we're not, you know, top of the class, we're not bottom of the class. We're doing something, but it has to be something. It can't just be performative nonsense. Mm. And I just won't accept that.
Mm. Yeah, with the gigs in that the trials in the UK and the things that came out of it, only 15 out of a possible 58,000 people have so far tested positive, and that was from the events research program. Obviously, they have changed their restrictions from June 21st to 19th July because of COVID cases. But I don't think that's a major surprise because I think the UK, like, you still talk about comparing and contrasting things. UK is a bit more like forthright in terms of how they're doing it. And then even in the US, they have the opposite problem of trying to, like, Chicago, they're even trying to give away 1,200 Lollapalooza tickets as an incentive for people to get vaccinated. So that is even their issue.
Yeah.
Where on my WhatsApp group this morning is people in their late 30s going, when are they open the vaccination thing? I want to register. Do you know what I mean? There's a palpable, like, sense of, I want to be vaccinated. I want this to happen.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the next point, because we're in the point where, okay, most of the older people in our lives are vaccinated now, at least one dose. So that kind of anxiety that you might hurt somebody or worse is no longer there.
Yeah.
And so then there has to be some recognition of that context as well for these events. It's like, okay, yes, the majority of people who go to events are young, and therefore most of them aren't vaccinated at the moment. And then you're seeing all these other pilot events, like that Phoenix Park one that's 3,500 people, or I think it's in Imma now. So I'm not sure how, I think for me, I really need to see those things like antigen tests included in those so that we actually see that they aren't just like, they're not even trial gigs. They're just like events to put on. And I can totally understand why people go, right, this is just like a PR exercise. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So So we really need that next. So what can we do in terms of, like, I mean, I know it's up to promoters and the people who are putting on those gigs to push those things. I understand the National Concert Hall, like, being the first people putting it on. And also, in fairness to NCH, they don't normally put on outdoor events either. So
no.
That's another part of all this that's maybe lost. And I do hate this, like, social media kind of, binary a discussion where you're like, it looks shit, I'm not going. And actually, like what I said last week, it was like, I think the videos don't do it justice.
Because
it was actually such a lovely occasion. Well, it didn't feel empty in any way.
I said to you last week, now, looking at the videos, that that level of distance between people, I was really relieved to see it. Like, I didn't go to it because I'm still a bit I'm on the very cautious side of things. Just for me personally, I'm very pro the music industry getting back to where it needs to be, or at least there not being this disparity between where music is and where sport is and where pubs are. And I looked at those videos and I was like, oh, that looks safe, that looks lovely, but I don't see why it couldn't go out further or back further. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was plenty of space there. It looked good, but it's also not what I want gigs to look like for the rest of my life, or even for the rest of this year. Do you know? I wonder. What I've been thinking is, I've also been seeing videos and pictures from outdoor dining and pubs and people having drinks and, you know, pedestrianizing streets where you can have all these people outside. I mean, there's probably over 500 people and they're a lot closer. What do you think it is, James, about the, specifically I think about the live events and music industry? Why is there such a reluctance for the government to allow risk at all? And is it the same thing as the conversation that's been happening about nightlife in this country for however many years that this has been going on? Namely, people go to gigs to get drunk and young people don't know how to behave themselves.
Yeah, I think all of these things go hand in hand. I think that there's like Ireland is a really anomalous, interesting country in the sense that it's a small country, but it's English speaking. So the potential for music to go big and beyond is quite outsized. You know what I mean? Like it's like we have a population comparable to a lot of, you know, like Central European smaller countries, but they don't have the musical industry that we have. They don't have the artists that we have, these huge, like, world beating stars. It's a really unusual thing here, but because it's so small, I think everything starts on a kind of a governmental level. I think that that's something you need to acknowledge, that every artist that comes through tends to at some point get support from either the Arts Council or from First Music Contact or one of these like industry Arts Council funded setups that are there to like fund people going to South by Southwest or all these different things. So we have this situation where it's not institutionalized, but even those companies, which are to a degree like lobbying groups and advocates on behalf of the music industry, they are still kind of to a large degree beholden to the government, you know, on that level, which means that the conversation here, it's never been as belligerent as it is in other countries, because I think there's always that like slight fear in the back of your head where if I say the wrong thing or I do the wrong thing, my funding might get pulled. And maybe that sounds a little bit like conspiracy theorist. That's not my intention. I just think it's a reality of it. I think it would affect how a lot of people interact with these conversations, because they just want to make sure that they get that license for that festival next year. Like if you come out and start throwing bombs about, I want this, I'm going to set up, I'm going to do a show, fuck this, fuck that, then there's this very real situation where like you might find yourself without that license you need to play that outdoor show in Malahide Castle next year or whatever it might be. I do think that on an almost an inception point level with the Irish music industry, especially on an artist side and a management side and different stuff, there is this sense that like just do the thing, do it within the framework of what's provided. I think that has then fed into maybe on a wider scale where like arts here is seen as like we're such honest brokers. Like I remember last year when everything started shutting down, there was a press release from somebody advocating on behalf of musicians and the industry wider. And it said, you know, we've lost like 40 million euros worth in ticket sales. And I remember thinking, why pick such a low number? Mm-hmm. Why aren't you picking the number that is actually reflective of, for every 1 euro that gets spent on a ticket, 20 or 30 probably gets spent on drink and food and the wages and all the tax base that we provide to the country and then beyond that. It's art and culture is seen as such an integral, ingrained part of society here. But I actually think that it can be almost negative in that sense. I think that there's this idea that it's always going to be there, regardless of what happens. There'll always be someone that'll pick up that guitar and sing that song for you. There'll always be that thing. You go to that pub and you find that thing, and it's treated way lower, I think. Not I think, I know, than it deserves to be treated. I think that we, like that show last week, the amount of hoops that we had to jump through to make that work, and happily so. But I was looking in the eyes of people. I was listening. I had, you know, at one point I had an argument with someone. They were talking about different protocols on the day. And I was like, this is insane. You're never going to be able to repeat this. And no other industry is being asked to do this. And you're telling us that we need to do this and we're willing to do it. But I was like, I just need to say to you that this is an untenable situation. You need to temper that. You need to find the middle ground and create this. But yet again, it was that thing where like the music industry feels like sort of like the unwanted stepchild or something. Mm. That's my sense of it, is that like, yeah. We provide so much, we contribute so much money to the country, like more than Amazon, more than these bigger, huge countries or conglomerates that they bend over backwards to keep happy. But because of the diffuse nature of the music industry, it's just hard to...
Well, isn't that one of the things that's happened now recently in like since the pandemic is that, you know, we've had like artist representative bodies and industry representative bodies like Epic or MEAI or whoever it is that who have just actually come together and are representing the interests of the people who previously didn't have to be represented because... Yeah. Like the commercial promoters did not need government support prior to this.
Yeah.
That can be a good thing, but there has always been the idea that it has been underappreciated. Arts and culture here is underappreciated, especially music and popular music, you know. Like, it's not a diss on other genres, but like in terms of, you know, its funding, it always seems to be a scrap. Like you mentioned First Music Contact earlier on, the amount of money they get compared to what they actually do.
Yeah.
It's like 80 grand a year, but like they do so much with it.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of things. It's like Irish music always does well, regardless of how much it gets. So therefore it's justified.
It does well despite how much it gets.
Exactly. So therefore people go, well, it's obviously fine.
Yeah.
but what if we did more? You know what I mean? And the same with the Give Us the Night campaign. You know, you're seeing, and what I really appreciate about the Give Us the Night campaign is the reframing of nighttime culture and activity as something that is actually cultural and something that is uplifting and benefits your mental health and not like pure hedonism. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that idea is changing slowly. But now we're in the middle of this and we're trying to get out of it. And we're in the position where you still have to convince people who are overly cautious and who don't want to put a foot wrong that we need to move forward. So, but just, I guess I think, you know, it's like with the pilot events, we can look at Liverpool and we can look at all this, but there's loads of examples out there of people of countries that are, I'm sure there's countries like us who are being very conservative as well. You know, we're not hearing about those. Like I said, you don't see an article about, they put on a 500 capacity social distance gig in, I don't know, wherever. Like it could be anywhere. But you know what I mean? It's like you just don't see those kind of things. So I think, so what would you like to see next then? What do you think we should be working towards? And what do you think practically the industry and people around it can do?
I think that like what you said there about like Andrea, about people, like the music industry has thrived in spite of the certain thing, you know what I mean? Those limited budgets that get provided to the Arts Council and to cultural enterprises in general to like fund this, because music, I'm a commercial recording artist, you know, like I've made money through the work. And when I was a smaller artist, I made money, and then as I got bigger, and I never handouts and not handouts, I don't want to sound like dismissive of it, but I never expected that money, I never counted on it. And I would say that if you talk to every other musician in my position and bigger or relatively smaller, they would say the same thing, that like we'll turn like a penny into a euro. Like it's not about it's like that's probably as much the problem as anything, is that like we always have found a way to succeed. Like in, you know, 2008, 2009, when the world collapsed, that was literally when I started my music career. And there were places like Block T, all these amazing spaces that like you go and combine with other artists. They got taken away when the world got back to normal and we got back to like, you know, the Celtic Tiger-ish ways and stuff. And at that point, like my career was thriving, and I was only concerned with my career. I wasn't I wasn't turning around trying to see what was going on in the Irish music scene. How could I help? And in this last year and a half, because I've been here, I've been doing as much as I can to try and engage with as many people as possible, bring people into the studio, try and do as much work to try and provide as much like help and relief and release and musical output for people as possible. But the government has to fundamentally appreciate that like what we provide is good. And it's like, it's almost like you have to all go on strike for a week for them to fully appreciate what it is that we bring to this country. And because that will never happen, and because we're never going to get to a point where, you know, like all musicians are going to down tools or not take that photo with that person or not do that thing, there'll always be that one person that will do it. And there's this argument that could be made that last week I saw a certain amount of people going like, why are you being part of this thing? Mm-hmm. And I would say that I was being part of it because I entered into it in good faith. I believed in the thing. I still believe in it because I think that it was something that could be rolled out. It would have to be scale back in terms of its logistical ridiculousness. And I think you would have to give the music industry a lot more credit in its ability to articulate those events in a safe way without all the bells and whistles that got provided. So that's what I want to see next. I want to see them. I want to see someone on a governmental level saying, we don't think that some dude singing a Kings of Leon song in a fucking bar in Temple Bar is going to be the difference between a super spreading COVID event or not. People are going to be in pubs in a couple of weeks or in indoor dining. They're not going to be in there with tape measures, making sure people are fucking meter apart. But out in a field, they were 2 meters apart. One person, 2 meters, one other single person. Like that's, you have to treat it fairly. You have to treat the music industry with the respect that it deserves. And it would take, I think it takes maybe a few other bigger musicians coming out as well and saying the same thing. That's tough because music is a competitive sport. Everybody is always kind of weirdly competitive with each other. It's a tough thing to try and unify everybody, but it has to happen because I'm fine. I got to sit in my arse for a year and a half and financially it doesn't have any impact on me. That's a blessing, but it's not the same for everybody else. It's about the conversation tends to be about bigger events and stuff like that. But I'm honestly here more concerned with wedding bands and people in bars singing cover songs that aren't allowed to. Mm. And that conversation isn't happening. They kind of broached the subject, but they didn't come back on it. And they need to come back on it. They need to say that that's fine. That's safe. Because it is fine and it is safe. It's safe as you said, like 2,000 people in like outside the Wellington Monument drinking totally fine and totally safely all last summer. And you could have just put a stage there and had people sing. I put a proposition to the government to say, can we put some stages up and I'll go and play for free. I'll get friends to play for free. And again, they came back and said it was that they needed to be more cautious and different things. And that shit is beyond my pay grade. That's beyond most of our pay grades. But fundamentally, use your eyes and ears. You can see that this stuff is safe and that the music industry is so goddamn professional that they can pull this stuff off with their hands, with one hand tied on their back. Mm.
There is, I something that has been really, I think, compounded by the pandemic is the sort of rot that is deep within the government's relationship to the music industry. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been here for a really, really long time. And not singling any particular politicians out, but you know, when you see a politician going to a Kylie Minogue show or a Lizzo show or something, and that is being seen as, you know, supporting the arts and isn't it great to have culture in Ireland? But then when you have something like the 2008 financial crash, or you have something like the COVID-19 pandemic, and the whole industry is wiped out because people cannot afford to play for free because it is a job, then there is very little onus. There's only really a response once it is asked for. And I think we really, really saw that with the pandemic. It took a while for the government to respond. And I think that after the pandemic, there is going to be a lot more conversation that needs to happen once we do get, quote unquote, back to normal. There's more that needs to be done for musicians beyond getting more arses and seats at gigs. Like we need to start treating musicians like they have jobs because they do.
I would say that fundamentally, like there has to be a wider respect for a part of, like there's these huge swathes of society that like I think governmentally are just get ignored or just assume they will subsist or they will exist or they will, some of them might thrive, but like they aren't the focus of the attention. And I think like the way I look at it is that like I got into music because I love making music. I was obsessed with it as a child. I made music. Once you achieve a certain level of success, your life, it kind of changes and you're suddenly about like trying to like maintain that lifestyle and grow it. And you make a lot of money. You want to make more money. Like it's all these different things. It's not wildly different to being a politician, where like politicians, I assume for the most part, get into it because they actually want to be public servants and they want to help people. Some people probably don't get into it for that reason. They get into it for like less sincere reasons. But once you achieve a certain amount of power, then all of a sudden it becomes about maintaining that power and trying to like bring your friends up as well. It's like, so like politicians need to get back to a point where like what we did last week, what I was trying to do was put on the greatest show that was possible based on the fact that we haven't played in a year and a half, so that if there were politicians in the building, if they had that spirit of like, I remember why I got into this, to help people, that they could stand in a field or they could watch that live stream or whatever it was, or watch me on the news and say, okay, look at those people, look what this can bring to people. Remember that point where like you remembered what that group of society that you've maybe just not focused on. So you focused on these other bigger multinational companies, or it's the conversation has changed over the years and it's become more about these bigger entities than the individual. And what I was trying to do last week was trying to create some sort of humanistic face to the music industry here and say, look what we can do, look what we can bring. And that conversation needs to happen. And it's not just for this. It's obviously like the housing crisis, all these different things. It's all connected. I don't believe that those two situations aren't intertwined in the sense that it's the same, like those cuckoo funds wouldn't have been part of a conversational tone. They've been existing in the city for years, but it was only when they bought a housing estate in Kildare or Kilkenny that everyone was like, whoa, what's going on? And then even still, the government are still like, well, we don't want them doing that, but we still do want them like buying up these huge apartment blocks in the city. And it's like, why is that just an accepted platform? Why is that an accepted thing? It's obviously I'm sort of tangentially going off here, but my fundamental point is like the government has to get back to helping people that aren't looking for handouts. They aren't looking for anything. I'm not on here. Last week wasn't like, give us money to like, you know, fund this industry so we can go play free shows. We're just looking for like a viable opportunity to get those people that have been fucked over for a year and a half. And we're past the point now of it. Like last year, tonally, you couldn't come out and be like, bring shows back, because it was like, we're in the midst of this thing. We need to protect people. And everyone in this industry was a willing participant in that because we all understood what was at stake. But if you see other industries thriving and getting back to normal, or whatever the version of normal is now, and you see these other industries still being left behind because it gets thrown this idea of caution, you have to be cautious. And you're like, where's the fairness in the caution? Where's the caution scale? I just haven't. No one showed it to me, you know.
And I think there would be a lot more trust if there was just some guidance given. If it wasn't just this constant, you know, if the government came out and said, okay, when the transmission rate is at this, then we can do this. Instead of having these kind of arbitrary dates where it's like, oh, well, this week we can have people in hotels, and this week we can have people in pubs, and this week we can have people outside or inside or whatever it is. It doesn't seem like it doesn't seem like there's much piloting going on in those sorts of spaces, pubs and so on. It's sort of just like, well, let's cautiously inch by inch get this open.
Yeah.
But then the music industry doesn't have that afforded to it at all.
Yeah, we have the roadmap that, you know, stops on, it says July 5th, we got restrictions and 50 cap at most venues, 100 cap can attend events in larger venues, outdoor 200 cap for most venues, 500 max for outdoor venues, with a minimum accredited capacity of 5,000. And then August, nothing confirmed after that. But nothing after that. And that's
the
why I'm like...
The vagueness of outdoor like, venues is incredibly frustrating, because an outdoor venue in this country is Crow Park and it's also Ivy Gardens. Like there's no... How on earth can you say that a 500 capacity in both of those spaces is fair? Like that's it's completely ridiculous. We've plenty of Irish acts here that could play a more limited capacity Crow Park, but that's it's just there's no desire there to take any risks. And I don't mean public health risks, I mean financial risks, or risks in terms of how it would look. And yet we can have sports in those. It's optics, right? That's it.
The word optics got used a lot last week, and that was what set off my argument with this one gentleman on the day. Was I was like, like, if you're going to, if you need to do this, then you need to do it on a military level. You need to like police every single aspect of this from start to finish, because anything other than that is performative. I was like, you keep saying optics to me, but I am in this to pay wages for people. And these are humans. These are humans that have been put through a year and a half of, like, you know, we've all been through it, but like the music industry has been really hard done by it. And I think that we're at that point now, like I said, where like it's, you talked about like this, no one's talking about risking, you know, human welfare or like human safety. It's not, it's, if we accept that we're into this, like opening up stage, and I think we all do, then as you said, Niall, that they've pushed the conversation to a certain point, but it still feels performative to me. I want to see it tangibly written down on paper, because this industry deserves it. I don't want anybody to think that I was part of something last week. I was so proud of what we did last week. And if you were there now and you saw it, like, it was a strange premise, and I had to work really, really hard to try and make it work for 500 people spread across the full field.
Yeah, but the show was great. The show was brilliant, and you should be commended for that, and rightly so. But I
can imagine there was a sense of betrayal though when you're told at the beginning that it will be one thing, and then on the day of the show you're being told about optics. That's not like a nice place to be.
No, I wouldn't say betrayal, because I think that the conversation organically moved over the course of weeks, and we always knew we were pragmatic. Like, I went into it from a pragmatic perspective. I didn't think this is going to be this. I hoped it would be like the UK, but like the year and a half of being in Ireland, suggested that wasn't going to be ultimately where they landed, that they were going to have a conversation on like a cabinet level, and they were going to come back with something that was much more like, or much less ambitious, which is exactly what happened.
Sure.
So there was no one at any point was like, we've completely changed the script on you. But I think last year there was a thing that we did called Songs from an Empty Room. And one of my old tour managers, Ronan, who's an amazing human being in the music industry, Ronan Murphy, he was managing the night, and he gave us this speech where he was like, if we do this right, there's government people here tonight, and if they see how well we do, if we like get everyone in their dressing rooms, then we can reopen, you know, this is it. And I remember thinking, what a beautiful and ridiculously naive instinct to have for such a smart person, because he was so desperate for this to happen. But I'm, you know, I've been doing this 10 years and I've existed on a certain level for 10 years. I understand how it works. I understand that like people say a certain thing and what they actually deliver on is going to be a mile apart. Mm. So I didn't go into last year or last week thinking, fuck, yes, this is it. I just didn't want to be the guy that was on the cover of every newspaper and then just sailed off into the sunset. Like, I've done my part. Mm. Like, I'm here to engage on a level that whatever level people need to engage on, to try and keep the conversation going. And I would hope that other people would join me in that conversation.
Yeah. And I think, so looking forward, I think the major thing now is that we don't have anything in terms of guidelines for any kind of events. And I don't know if you get the same thing, but I'm constantly surprised by the number of people who, I got a message maybe yesterday that was like, Niall, is the Caribou gig in the Ivy Gardens happening on July 9th? I was like, no, of course it's not. Like, yeah. How could it possibly be happening? But there are still people there who have that hope. And I kind of go, okay, I'm in this. I'm looking at this. But like, you know, for people who aren't paying attention, there seems to be that kind of idea. It's like the Electric Picnic thing. It's like, oh, is Electric Picnic going to happen? And we focus on Electric Picnic as this white whale that's going to happen. And then maybe it's going to happen. And then, you know, it's just like, I just can't, it's not going to happen because of the evidence we've seen from the last few months. The fact that we don't have a roadmap, the fact that you need insurance, the fact that to plan something like that, you need huge numbers. You need production. You need advanced planning. And we currently still don't have the advanced planning or guidelines at all about any of this stuff. How I'm operating is October is when I'm looking at things will definitely be back by then. But look, I don't know, because who does know?
Yeah.
But that's more kind of my hopeful, my cautious, optimistic approach is like, all right, so I run a club night called Lumo. I want that to happen on the 23rd of October. And that's what I'm hoping for by that point. But also I want gigs before. I know there's gigs booked in the Olympia.
But wouldn't like, October be such a missed opportunity to make the most of outdoor venues in the summer?
Like, oh, to just without a doubt.
Like, even everything that we know about how the virus spreads is that you are so much more safe outside, no matter what situation you're in. The ventilation is kind of key, and that's a message that hasn't really, when you look at a lot of other governments, they've been really pushing that when it comes to reopening pubs and reopening indoor spaces. It's not really something that our government has been leaning into a lot, but what a missed opportunity for larger gigs outdoors and larger kind of just cultural events, fairs, you know, a fete, you know, just things, nice things to do on a Sunday. I just don't see what the presence of music changes about having 1,000 people or more sitting in Stephen's Green or Phoenix Park, where there's no regulation. Surely putting a stage there will mean that there will be regulation. There'll be people saying, hey, but we need to maybe keep this a bit safe, etc. It just feels mad to me that we're just going to go through the rest of the summer with incredibly overly distanced gigs. And then in October or November, and I absolutely agree with you now, I foresee this happening. October or November, once we get to a certain stage of vaccinations, then it's we're going to trial the same stuff, but indoors. So much far behind where we could be if we actually got some like scientists and public health experts involved in the conversation to do with live music. You know, it's frustrating.
It's massively frustrating, and everything that you're saying is like, I couldn't agree with you more. Like, I think that it would be such a missed opportunity. I think that if I was to be like a cynical minded human, I think that maybe when tourism becomes a bit more of a factor, I think the music industry might get dragged along with it a little bit, because I think that
we are sort of
like the unwanted stepchild, while also providing vast amounts of money for every reason. We're like very low down the hierarchical scale of need in terms of government talking points, but other industries that are inextricably tied to us and need us, need not me per se, but like need that person to sing like the Luke Kelly song in a bar in Baltimore, Cork. I was in Baltimore, Cork yesterday, and it was like, it's June and it was one of the hottest days, and it was like suspiciously weirdly quiet because there's no tourists. Like, there's Irish tourists, but we can only like fill a finite amount, especially on a Monday morning. So like it's going to get a point really quickly where the government are like, we need those Americans and we need those continental Europeans here. And I think that might drive the conversation. I agree with you. I don't think we're going to get back to like, you know, glorious open sky shows anytime soon. But I think my hope, and it's a depressing hope because it's not necessarily based on what we did last week. It's based on what I just said, which is that like tourism is a huge driver of the economy here, that like that might mean that those musicians that need that 100 euro, 150 euro per night to play covers gigs might get back to work. Wedding bands might get back to work, because they are kind of like, that's how musicians subsist until they get back to the other stuff, or that's how they start. So that's kind of where my instinct is. The bigger shows I obviously want to happen. I'm ambitious for that stuff. I'm also incredibly pragmatic and realistic, because for a year, the country has shown, like on a governmental level, has shown no real appetite to engage on those conversations. Mm. So people booking in shows for, you know, August, September are doing it at their own risk, but obviously want it to happen and need the money. So I get that.
It's a very good point and a very sad point about the link between tourism and the music industry. And I think that that's been something that we've seen even before the pandemic, you know, that our art scene is something that is there. It exists to bring tourists to Ireland, and our artists, we're tearing down cultural spaces to build hotels to put the tourists in, and the tourists they're literally not going to have anything to look at when they come here. And I think that we are going to see that attitude persist when we reopen, because of course when we reopen to tourists, especially American tourists, of course we want to then, and by we, I mean the government, then want to roll out our musicians and say, oh, well, look, this is what you came here for. Aren't we brilliant?
Yeah.
Don't we have such a brilliant cultural landscape here in this country, when really nothing has been done to support that? And I wouldn't blame any artist for downing tools. I really wouldn't.
Yeah.
Like, if it was any other industry, there would have been more than one strike by now. You know?
I don't think they will, though. And I think, again... I think that's probably in and of itself incredibly, it speaks to the determination of musicians to make it work, but also is a reason why we're having to have these conversations and there's not some gigantic lobbying group working on behalf of us to kind of like not behalf of me, but on behalf of like jobbing musicians everywhere, because we will just make it work. It's a vocation. This isn't like some put upon occupation. Musicians want to do this. People in the arts like want to do this. They're used to the ebb and flow of their financial reality. Their sense of well-being isn't necessarily tied or hasn't been tied historically to how much money they make. It's the fact that they get to play shows or they get to put on that event or they get to paint that picture and put it on a wall in the gallery and sell it. It's based on that. And because we'll always figure it out, I think there's the conversation, the government doesn't appreciate the industry because they know, fuck it, they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
They're not going to leave this industry. Some people will, and there have been some really, really sad, really tragic stories that need to get talked about in terms of people whose like mental health has fallen apart because of this year and a half and the uncertainty that surrounds all this. And this is a huge, another huge part of why I did the show last week and why I want to have these conversations, is because it's not just an economic thing. It's as much a mental health thing. But this is the problem, is that musicians are so determined. I just say musicians. I don't want to like negate like the other vast parts of the cultural sector. It's just I'm speaking from my obviously position of relative expertise. They'll figure it out. They're never gonna give up. So if the government is like, you need to sit home for another 5 or 6 months, they'll sit home for another 5 or 6 months. They'll figure it out, because this is what they're in it for. They're in it to play music. But because that's gone on for so long now, that the interaction on a governmental level is so passive to this industry, where they just think they'll exist, they'll subsist from time, they'll thrive when we thrive, they'll thrive when tourism thrives, they'll thrive when there's people here to spend money. Economics, if people are making money, then they're spending money on tickets. So it's like, we're like the end of the equation. We're not part of it. Mm-hmm. And I would love it to be where we're part of the equation on much further towards the
front. Yeah, isn't that just like part of the idea of how music is thought about and culture is thought about in this country, and with, you know, support for spaces and venues and all that kind of thing? We are lacking in that way of the recognition of the importance of it and the power of it as well, like the power of music, like the fact that you even have to talk about like that music is powerful. And maybe that's one of the reasons why there's a cautious approach to having people in a field, because, you know, music moves people, and therefore
they might all go crazy.
They might do things they don't want to. Yeah. And like, you know, and then you introduce alcohol into the equation, and we obviously have a complicated issue with alcohol as well. So like,
but it's fine to open the pubs.
Yeah,
you just can't have a guy singing Christy Moore in the corner, because then people will go mad. Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to unpack it all and how interconnected and how fucked up it all is, you know, we could be here for hours talking about it, because you're absolutely right. There is like, you can't, music is linked to alcohol, is linked to like belligerent behavior. That's how certain people, like maybe older people or like the boomer generation or like some politicians think of it. Mm. It's completely incorrect. If anything, adding event staff to South William Street would have made that a completely viable situation. Like, I know that's a ridiculous thing to say, but it's completely true. I would go hard on the event prowess of the music industry is unparalleled, and they're all just sitting there waiting to be activated. Like, put them to work, let them do their job, let them like make sure that those people don't get away from themselves, because that's what they've been doing safely and securely. I've never been at a festival that has looked anything like what happened on South William Street in my entire life.
Yeah.
And I've been at some of the rowdiest festivals in the world.
I walked around there the afternoon of that happening, because in buying a record, and I got the Sinead O'Connor book, and I was like, everything is very well closely packed together. The toilets and everyone else, all these areas that are open, they're just like so packed tightly. Mm. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like it was, you're starting a pressure cooker. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're
trying. Exactly.
Whereas you get one festival organizer in there to consult. They'll be like, okay, well, we obviously can't have all the toilets together, because that's ridiculous. No. Because if we did that electric picnic,
all of the people
it'd be mayhem.
Yeah.
So it didn't make any sense, and that was why I was kind of going like, Jesus, you need to get these people like actually organized and event planned and all that.
And imagine if they had a bit of music to be looking at, like would they
another thing that doesn't get talked about, like the reason, like I've in my entire life of living in Dublin City, I've never seen a bunch of random kids jumping on top of fucking taxis in the city center, but I've also never seen a year and a half where those kids haven't gotten to go to Longitude Festival and like scream at the top of their lungs. Mm. Like there is a connection between these things that does have to get talked about, that like, it's not just about like, it's the same way that they talk about like outdoor summer, like it's all alfresco fucking dining and shit. It's not, it's like, you have to account for all the different variables and all the nuances. And like outdoor summer for some people is doing a bunch of pills and going to a dance festival. That has to, like, that's an accepted reality. That's a reality that all of us have experienced to some degree. Or like music outdoors, and it's all done in a controlled environment, like, because event staff know that there are some kids that are going to be off their faces, and they know to take care of those kids. They know to look after them. It's a weirdly holistic, like, festivals are a weirdly holistic thing. Like, it's not this like, fuck you, I don't want you to be here. Like, everybody is there. It's accepted. It's understood. It's embraced. And that's been lost. Mm. So all those kids have all this energy that they don't know what to do with. And it doesn't get talked about enough. No one was like, oh, if these kids were just able to go to like, you know, some like club night and like dance, would they be less inclined to jump on a taxi? Obviously, I can't say A leads to B, but you can kind of, you can surmise that maybe those kids would be less inclined to be acting.
Well, outlets, the lack of outlets mean that, you know, your energy has to go somewhere. I don't know. I mean, sometimes it's negative, sometimes it's positive. If you look at antisocial behavior, it's an evolving thing. James, I really appreciate your time for talking to us, and appreciate taking the time to debrief.
Yeah, thank you so much.
No worries.
It's much appreciated. And hopefully the next time we talk, it'll be in a more positive light. I mean, it is positive as well, but, you know, I hope we will have more positive things to look forward to and events to look forward to.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So. When I was 5, I talked too much. When I was 10, I think I started losing my touch. Another reason that you'll never find me. I come home every night, it's just me and my friends. Me and my friends, me and my friends. It's just me and my friends. Me and my friends, me and my friends. It's just me and my friends.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.